Diane Archangel is here, and her book is Afterlife Encounters, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Experiences, Life After Loss. And it's a pretty good-sized book. I would heartily recommend to any of you who really are curious about this, since it deals in hard evidence. And I know that these are the major questions most of us want. It would classify as in the top three things that anybody would want to know should they have an audience with God and be able to ask a question, though I suppose the audience itself would answer the question, wouldn't it? All right, Diane, welcome back.
Thank you, Art.
I just said something. I said an audience with God, it seems to me, would answer that question. You said you had that.
Yes, I did.
It seems like it would answer the question, unless in your mind, Diane, you're concerned that perhaps what you experienced was just randomly firing neurons in a panicked, stress, adrenaline-filled situation, otherwise called dying.
Honestly, there have been so many studies that dispute that theory.
I know.
That can I answer for absolute sure scientifically? I don't know. I know that I experienced a number of prophecies that came to pass.
Oh?
Such as of the war in the Persian Gulf. Now, take into account my near-death experience was more than 20 years ago.
Right.
So this was the first war in the Persian Gulf, the Rodney King beating. God kept telling me, take a closer look, take a closer look. He tried to get me to come back. I didn't want to. He said, your mother will die in 13 months. And I was arguing with him. Me, arguing with God. My dad was a Baptist minister. I'm arguing with God.
Wow.
But he kept telling me, take a closer look, and just showing me all these horrible future events. I saw a plane fly into a tower. I had no idea what that was.
Good Lord.
I heard screaming all over the world, oh, no, not in America. And I thought, you know, it's just a plane that flew into the tower. And, yeah, a few people were killed, but for that kind of reaction all over the world, I couldn't imagine until the day, of course, September the 11th. And then that's when the realization of what I saw really came in really full force for me.
Bob Bigelow is a friend of mine. How did he get interested in you?
Let me see. I was doing some research, and he spoke with me about it, invited me to fly into Las Vegas, do some research for him, which I did with George Anderson. We brought George in and did some research that's never been published that is just, I can't explain it.
You can't?
No, we just...
Why don't we take a shot at it?
All right. It's, we brought in some... We, meaning Dean Radin, was there at the time.
I know Dean very well.
All right, Dean was there. Janine Redman and I, and Dean brought in some very, very expensive equipment from Stanford. In fact, my understanding is it was $250,000 to rent just for the weekend.
I believe that could be true, yes.
Just for the two cameras. So, of course, with the cameras, Stanford, who was the rental company, sent in what I would call a bouncer. It was a protector, someone to protect their precious equipment.
Uh-huh.
We brought in six people before George Anderson to test the circumstances. We had a room. We put the two cameras. We had all sorts of measuring equipment. And this, by the way, is in the book. It measured the heat in the room, any kind of temperature change.
Right.
We had each person completely wired for any kind of emotional change, skin temperature, and so forth.
Right.
Now, the six people before George, one at a time, went in, sat down. We said, just sit here, see what happens. Had experiences, but the people themselves on camera were brightly colored. There were greens, blues, yellows, reds, whites, every color in the rainbow. Fine. George came in, sat down at the last day. George, at first, just like all the other sitters, completely different colors, red, blues, yellows, vibrant colors.
See, my mind is screaming to know what spectrum was being looked at and the technical details of this, and you're not going to have them, are you? It's okay. It's okay. But
well, what we could find from it is actually what I'm going to tell you, is that there was George sitting. He was all the bright colors, just like everyone else. But within a few minutes, George's colors faded until he was totally white.
Oh.
The only thing we could see, two tiny spots for his eyes and two tiny spots for his nostrils.
And of this you made what?
Well, something unusual that we can't this is what we don't know why. We can't explain it, but here's the thing. The technician said, something is wrong with the cameras. This can't be. This could not happen. This has never happened in as long as we've had these cameras. He went stomping down the stairs, just, as I say, like a bouncer. Let me fix it. I'll take care of this.
Yes.
He entered the room, knelt down beside George, reached out to fix the camera. Now,
let me guess, there were all the colors on him.
Yes, you got it.
Wow.
He was totally colorful. George remained white, but then George began to discern this man's, I believe it was his brother and his uncle. The man flew out of the booth.
Wow.
He was white as a ghost. But every person who entered that booth remained the same bright colors except for George.
Okay, I take it Dean Radin could probably explain the technical aspects of this, huh?
And actually, he wrote a paper that was published, and of course, I have it cited in my book.
Okay.
Yes,
this is very important stuff. I'm going to get hold of Dean Radin on this issue as well. So
that would be great.
Yeah, that would be great. I'd really like to know what they were looking at, the spectrum, what they were seeing, and then what they did not see. What was Mr. Anderson's intent?
Our intent with the entire research program, or especially that study, was just to see in this environment, could we record any anomalies? Could we record any kind of spirit? Could we capture on film
right.
an apparition?
Right.
Could we catch any type of heat? As you were saying earlier with Ramona, a cold, could we capture that? And indeed, there were anomalies.
I've got thermometers everywhere, inside, outside, temperatures, humidity. I monitor it all. It's just one of those things I do. And I can guarantee you that there was no real cold associated, for example, with what I felt. In fact, I got the temperature in the house way high by my standards. And so there was no actual dip in the temperature in the room. But you're saying that occurs.
That does occur.
All right. Meeks did some incredible things. I actually, even though the quality was bad, I played, about 45 minutes of one of the Meeks tapes here on the air, and it was astounding. Have you heard it?
I have heard them. And you asked for my opinion earlier.
Yep.
So I'm guessing that's what you're doing.
Yep. So if it, you know, you're sounds like you're dancing a little, so your opinion is going to be not too good of Meeks, I take it.
Actually, until I go out and physically, with my own eyes, my own ears, my own fingers, have a one-on-one with the researcher, I don't judge.
Oh, okay.
My book, in the chapter titled Considering the Controversial,
yes,
I wrote about
Meeks.
And you, as you know, there's a long list of how we refer to them, EVP, electronic voice phenomena, spirit
right.
voice, the whole thing.
Right.
I went out and I did research with who the people at the time were the reported top researchers in the field. I couldn't find anything. What they were doing is they were recording off of a C-band radio, playing it backward, and then interpreting what they heard as a spirit talking.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember back in the Beatles, I believe the album was called the White Album?
Oh, of course.
And people were playing it back. Some said Paul was dead. Some thought they swore it that said George is dead.
Yeah.
It's basically the same thing. It's playing that backwards.
Backmasking, yeah. But, you know, again, I am in touch with this group that gets contemporary forward things on recordings. It is a very interesting field that I haven't been able to really knock holes in yet. In other words, the equipment's good. There's just no chance it could really be anything else. If you've heard some of these, it would... Anyway, you should listen when I have the GIS on. I think you'll be quite surprised.
I would love to. I'll make a point to do that.
One very worrisome thing that they cannot account for, and I certainly cannot, is that perhaps even a majority of the voices that they capture are voices of children. Very concerning.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And you don't believe that these voices could be captured from an ordinary means?
I've looked at it awfully hard. It doesn't seem like it, no. I think it's worth serious investigation. I mean, if you go back since the recording, since the invention of the ability to record things, this has been investigated. I mean, you know, a lot of the original inventors thought it might be a method for a communication with those who have passed. So this goes back as long as recording devices go back.
Well, I did include the book after my little research with the people who were either professionally taping in the field as opposed to people who were just, say, a grandmother who was at home and wanted to tape.
Right.
And the people who were at home, like the grandmothers and so forth, who were not trying to do this professionally, did capture voices. And they were not on this reel-to-reel where they play it backwards.
I know.
They just set their little recording device, their little recorder, and captured it. And the difference is, they also captured children. But they were happy. They were giggling. They were saying, I love you. There wasn't anything frightening or negative or... Doesn't sound like the
well,
same.
Well, that's
type
exactly
of
what might have been, I can clearly see, in that area. The people that I deal with, these GIS people, who are not profiteers, they don't write books, they don't take money for what they do, they're just fascinated with this. They're a group and they do it. And the fact that they don't, you know, write books, no offense, or whatever, you know, gives them, in my mind anyway, some credibility. They just do this and spend their own money on it. That's that. They've never, in all the years I've interviewed them, asked for a thing. So, you know, it's quite interesting. They tend to go to graveyards and prisons and mental hospitals, and so they get associated material that you would expect to get in those places if, in fact, these tape loops that we were talking about earlier really are true.
And perhaps maybe that's why they, and perhaps they are getting real spirit voices, and maybe that's why, because they're not going at it professionally. They're not out writing books, as you say, or taking money or charging for it or anything like that.
No.
Maybe that's why, like the little grandmothers.
So anyway, Lex Denton Friedman, you put George Meeks in your gray box. Kind of, there it is, but I don't know.
That's it. Yep. I just don't know. I never studied with him. I never went out one-to-one, face-to-face, and watched how he taped and what he did.
What drove you to go as far as you've gone in this field?
Oh, my goodness. Are you talking about from the very, very get-go for 50-something years ago?
Well, yeah, I guess I am.
Because what's driven me now is that there were so many comments in the media about afterlife encounters and how valuable they were, how comforting they were. So much so, my first focus is always with the bereaved. I'm so concerned that someone's going to take advantage of them. I've had it happen to me. So I was concerned that they were exaggerating the value. So I turned to my bereavement, my parapsychology colleagues, We looked through every journal, every piece of literature that we could find, trying to find any kind of study that said, okay, do they bring comfort? And if so, how much and for how long?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have an effect on the grief? No study had ever been done that specifically focused on comfort and grief.
And the result?
So that's why I developed this 5-year International Afterlife Encounter Survey.
Mm-hmm.
The results were astounding. 98% of the people who took this survey scored their afterlife encounters on a scale from 8 to 10. 98%.
That's amazing.
And some, as I spoke earlier in this evening,
that is amazing.
Some had been 50 to 60 years since their account occurred, and they still rated them on the highest scale possible.
That was a group of how many?
Actually, 3,000 took the survey, but I could only use, I believe it was some 900 and something people, because this is something that I found. If anyone out there is listening and is going to do a survey, it was on the Internet. It was quite a lengthy survey of 24 questions, some in 2 and 3 parts. What some of the respondents did is they began scoring, but then they were so excited that they skipped down and would write their questions, or they would write about their encounters.
Huh.
So those, anything that was not totally filled out, I couldn't use.
Got it. You really do fascinate me, because you really have held to some pretty strict standards of investigation and statement, particularly the investigation part. You've really taken a very straight course on this, and that makes your book very interesting, of course.
Thank you, Art.
Are you going to keep investigating? This sounds to me like it's a lifetime mission at this point.
It is. It began when I was 6 years old, on my very first day of school, and now I'm with the University of Virginia. We do mediumship research, and I'm in here for the long haul.
I'd be interested privately to hear about your meeting with Mr. Bigelow. He reminds me, did you ever see the movie Contact?
Jodie,
it was with Jodie Foster. It was a remarkable movie. At one point, this billionaire appears on a monitor and asks Jodie Foster, do you want to take a ride? And is this sounding familiar?
Oh, I have to see this movie.
Oh, yes, you will. And when you see it, just go and rent it or something. Think of Mr. Bigelow as the guy who says, want to take a ride. I think you'll get quite a kick out of it. At any rate, what I'd like to do shortly is, and I haven't done enough of it, is to let the audience ask you questions. Obviously, people have zillions of questions about this. I'm sure you would say, read my book. But I want to give a few of them coming up in the half hour an opportunity to actually ask you questions here upon the air. Well, all right. Once again, Diane Archangel. Welcome back, Diane.
Thank you, Art.
And here come some questions. And by the way, your book, let me plug that. Your book, where can we get your book? Amazon.com, the usual, what?
The usual. It's in most bookstores, such as Barnes & Noble, Borders. It's also available through the publisher, Hampton Roads.
Okay. All right. Some authors occasionally say, well, if you want to order it directly from me, I'll autograph it. You want to get into that trouble?
Unfortunately, I don't have any here to autograph.
Okay. All right, here come some questions. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Diane Archangel. Hi.
No.
Listen, I'm sorry. I can't include your last name. I had to zap that out.
That's fine. I'm sorry.
Your first name is?
Pat.
And you worked with who?
Raymond Moody with Diane.
Oh, you worked with Raymond Moody and Diane.
That's right.
Oh, you travel in big circles, Diane. okay, go ahead, caller.
After life experience that has been verified by the police and detective bureau that I thought you might be very interested in for another upcoming book.
Oh, of course.
Worked in this area with you in the past, so it was in the realm of dreams, but it wasn't a dream.
All right. That's exactly the kind of thing I guess she wants. It are things that are verifiable. And on that score then, Diane, if somebody has something that is absolutely verifiable, how would they get hold of you? Do you have email? Do you want to do that?
Probably the best thing is through my website. It is afterlifeencounters.com. If they have any trouble with that, they can reach me through afterlife-encounters.com.
Okay, so on these websites, there's email contact for you.
There is. There's email contact.
All right, that's good enough then. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Diane Archangel. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, Diane. This is Sandra in Ohio, and I called last week, Art, too, by the way. I've been a listener for nearly 5 years, and I love you and love your show. I've been a professional astrologer and medium for over 20 years, and I write in biomolecular medicine. A couple of things. Diane, could you give a little more information on the acclimating period when someone crosses over, that concept? And also, I've noticed in my own mediumship practice that runs in the family that some people in spirit, when I get in touch with them, seem to have an obsessive focus on a particular relative or person when they're relaying messages through me. Usually the person is a child that there's an obsessive focus on. And one of the things that I've come to the conclusion of about that is usually that happens when they're preparing to come back, when that spirit is preparing to come back through that individual, through the bloodline or the family line, and they almost end up with that person as a kind of an assignment.
All right,
so they're preparing their ancestor, so to speak.
That's a lot you've laid on her. take the last one first, and we'll go backwards, because those are good. Go ahead.
All right. As far as obsessive focus, they only come in here to help. It's for their growth as well as our growth. So if there seems to be, as you say, an obsessive focus, that's the person who needs them most at that time.
Does mediumship, the ability to see these things and understand them, run in families? Is it apparently genetic?
In some cases, Art, it does seem to be genetic. But then, say, for instance, George Anderson, as an example, didn't have anyone else in his family. So it really just depends on the individual. Sometimes, early on in life, of course, mediums are born with the ability, but something will happen, say, for instance, in George's case, where he had a very serious illness. I believe what happened with George is that he had a near-death experience.
Mm.
He went out, came back, so now it's easy for him to tap into that other world.
All right, a couple of extra words about the acclimating period.
Acclimating.
I guess you don't really, but then again, wouldn't there be some acclimating period? In other words, if you pass, particularly if you pass suddenly, if your consciousness pops up somewhere else, there probably is going to be some sort of period where you're going, what the hell just happened?
That's true. However, at the exact time that consciousness leaves the body, it goes to that light, that brilliant, that wonderful, that warm light. So when you say acclimate, that takes a time, a period, and it's different with each individual. But for our consciousness to rise into that light and to unite, then when they get there, it could be disorienting. It can be a time of looking around. There's no set time for anyone that I know of. It just depends on each individual. Our consciousnesses after death are just as varied as they are while we're alive.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Diane Archangel. Good morning. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Oh, this is Bill from Jacksonville, Florida.
Yes.
Most sincere compassion, Art.
Thank you. Do you have a question?
Yes. Diane?
Uh-huh. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I'm originally from North Carolina, so we don't need an interpreter. I attended Duke University when J.B. Ryan and Louisa Ryan were there. He coined the term ESP.
Yes.
Remember?
I sure do.
Okay, now you're talking about near-death experience. I get to the point. I had a near-life experience. It's when you have the inner light, like Dr. Maurice Buck's book, Cosmic Consciousness.
Yes.
And there's the new book's now by Dr. David Hawkins.
Right.
Thou versus Force, the Eye of the Eye, and I. And the new one is Truth versus Falsehood. You can use kinesiology testing to test anything. So you don't have to pay all those pieces of green piece of paper for testing machines. And on one show, Art, someone said that guy in Honolulu, if your wife was from Hawaii?
My wife was born at Ewa Beach, Hawaii, yes.
Okay. Reverend Fred Sterling is that guy. It's a Honolulu Church of Light. 1-800.
Okay, no. I'm sorry. That's where I have to chop you off. No numbers on the air. I certainly appreciate it. And again, Diane, you've certainly mixed in the right circles of research. And the temptation to jump ahead in beliefs and what you write must be gigantic. So to hold it back to what you can actually prove must be hard, isn't it?
It was very difficult. It's just a matter of saying, what have, as I was telling you earlier, have I seen with my own eyes, heard with my own ears,
yes,
felt with my own fingertips? This is what I'm going to present. I don't want to present anything that I have not myself observed.
Well, that's good. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Diane Archangel. Hello.
Hi, Art. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
This is Cindy from Las Vegas. I have a question for you. I've been a widow for 13 years, and I've had dreams off and on over the 13 years regarding my late husband. I just moved to Las Vegas the middle of August, so I haven't been here all that long. And I recently, within the last month and a half, bought a new house. Before that, I was living in an apartment. And since I bought my house and moved into it and furnished it, I've had some very disturbing dreams regarding my husband. And I was wondering if you could give me any insight as to why they have turned to be so disturbing, as whereas before they were just dreams about him.
Right.
Well, that is an interesting question, isn't it? In other words, if the original dreams were all comforting in some way, I don't know that I've ever heard of such a thing where they suddenly become, scary, disturbing, whatever. That's interesting. What do you think, Diane?
I would ask, disturbing in what way? What's disturbing about them to you, Cindy?
I don't think she wanted to answer that.
Okay.
She's gone, but I really don't think she wanted to get it in details about
okay.
that.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I would have to know more information in order to help her.
Okay. The International Line, you're on the air with Diane Archangel. Hi.
Hi, this is Dave. Hi, Art. And, good morning, Diane.
Hello, Dave.
Hello. I'm calling from Canada, and I'm impressed with your scientific rigor. I really am, as opposed to some of the people who have such dogma about what they say. The only thing is, it seems that you're crossing the line, you're walking a very thin line, occasionally jumping over, as Art just put it, that the temptation to fall over to the other side is very, very powerful, and I'm sensing that in you. And the problem with that is this, that once you have stepped over the line into full belief, and you have to be very cautious, I think, about that, for this reason, there's a reason why we die, and when we do, we're dead, essentially. And if you're able to step over that line, I don't think God or whatever power there be would allow us to step over the line. There's a reason why there's death and no more discussion of any kind. There's a reason for death in whatever God we believe
well,
in.
Maybe, sir, and maybe not. I mean, if you're listening to the results of the research, maybe that line is not so absolute. In other words, you could hear in his voice, Diane, that he had dogma that there is that separation, and any evidence of that line being crossed just can't be true.
And some people believe that we should not cross that line. Not only could it not be true, but we just, as I was saying earlier in the evening...
The worldview, right?
The worlds don't collide. They have theirs, we have ours, and we don't cross that line.
But you are crossing it, sort of.
Yes, I am. I've opened the door. I have been propelled through that door.
And you clearly feel that well, there is a building... mass of research in this area now. Is it going to continue to accelerate, do you believe?
I believe it will accelerate greatly, Art, simply because, like my study, we have never focused on, all right, so what does this mean? We have these encounters. What difference does it make? Now we're finding out through my study, it makes a tremendous difference.
Yeah. First time caller line, you're on the air with Diane Archangel. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Again, we'd rather not... all we
it's
want
not
is...
a last name. It's two names, first and middle. I go by my two names.
Oh, okay.
Don, got it?
Yeah, got it.
Okay. I have some extremely intense information that is like, it's gonna set all of what you're saying just like in another level. And it's phenomenal stuff.
All right, we don't have a lot of time, so you're going to have to lay it on us.
Okay, my sister gets visitings from people that die on a regular basis. There is, I mean, absolutely, positively the truth. And the weird thing is so does my daughter. And my daughter is 30. My sister is 48 or whatever. I mean, I could go into like about 100 stories.
No, you couldn't.
But I could, but I don't have time. But I mean, I don't know where to begin exactly. And what, you know, ask me a question.
That's all right. I don't have to. I can clearly hear the intense excitement in your voice. So, Diane, there's somebody who is a true believer and very, very excited. I take it that you probably back away a little bit from that or have to in what you do.
And actually what I do, Art, is just ask them to contact me through my website. I get a lot of people who email me who have information like this, and they don't know what to do with it. They don't know where to take it. They don't know how to help people with it.
I can understand why she's so excited.
Yes.
Do you take these people under your wing and help them in any way?
Well, I receive somewhere between 200 and 300 emails every day. There's only so much I can do, but I try to do what I can. Either if I can't guide them, I try to put them in the hands or direct them towards someone who can.
Well, you're about to get more email than that, so
I know.
Get ready. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Diane Archangel. Hello.
Hi, how's it going?
All right, sir.
This is Jared. I'm calling from Decatur, Illinois.
Yes.
And I just had a question for Diane. I would like to know your opinion, actually, on whether or not entheogens can open up a person's psyche up to the spiritual world. And by entheogens, I mean, fungi such as psilocybe cubescens.
Those hallucinogens?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, right. That's all right. Yeah, totally a valid question, Diane. There are many people who feel that hallucinogens open doors. Do you reject that premise?
I say any form of medication, any substance, whether it's alcohol or medication, will actually block it. What you may be getting are other people who use any type of hallucinogenic medication. They're getting something, but they are hallucinations. They're not real.
Well, that's an awfully sweeping statement. I'm not sure about this. We don't understand that much about the brain, really, right, Diane?
True, absolutely.
And we really can't state with absolute certainty that some hallucinogens may not open doors. I mean, you hate to say it because you don't want to encourage that kind of use, but can you really scientifically rule that out, Diane?
All I know is in our research, where we have researched with trying to induce or actually inducing afterlife encounters, if the person was on any kind of medication or alcohol, it blocked it. They didn't have anything. So that's the basis of my statement for that. Now, I'm not saying all or it can never be done, but in general, in the research that we've done, those people did not have an afterlife encounter if they were on any kind of medication.
Well, there certainly have been advocates of hallucinogens actually producing that kind of experience. And frankly, Diane, there, as you well know, there is laboratory work going on that stimulates certain parts of the brain, and the claims have been that they could simulate NDEs. Now, what do you know about that?
My question with that is that, all right, it's stimulated. That's the brain. So what is the difference between one that is induced and one is that an NDE that is spontaneous?
That's my question.
Right. Study the two differences, and you will see that somewhere along the way, there is some slight difference. For instance, in a spontaneous near-death experience, the person beyond a doubt knows that she or he is dying. That is not true with induced. There's a difference.
Yeah, there would seem to be. All right, give me, we're running out of time. Give me your website again, please.
All right, afterlife-encounters.com, or else just plain afterlifeencounters.com with no dash.
Good enough. Expect a great deal of mail.
I am, Art.
All right, Diane, we will have you back. We will do this again. What a great guest you've been.
Thank you. It's been wonderful. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much, Art.